We had the Pleasant Events calendar this past week. And if you'd like, you can even take that out. And so I want to just have kind of a brief discussion around why we do something like the Pleasant Events calendar. Again, this is something that brings up different experiences for different people, but a lot of the times it's reported as, a positive experience. I kind of liked being able to tune in throughout the day to various pleasant events. And you may notice that some of those were like really, really positive. Maybe there was like a job promotion. And then other times, maybe it's just like feeling the warm breeze on your face. And the big ones in our culture, I think we have a very complicated relationship to pleasure. Well, when I say our culture, I'm talking about America. That's just because where I live. But with globalization and everything becoming westernized, I would say in a lot of cultures we see this complicated relationship to pleasure where, well, in two ways. There's the first of we want to move to these big events, like that the happiness resides in the big pleasure, the marriage, the job promotion, sex, the great meal, buying a new house, all of these things, like those are the moments we live for. And it's like we got to get there. And once we get there, like phew, then everything will come together for me. And I mean, you just got to live through that to know that doesn't really work that way, right? You kind of get there and it's like, all right, this feels great. And then we want the next thing and then the next thing. And it's like climbing this ladder with an infinite number of rungs where it's like, all right, once I get there, then I'll be happy. And oh, wait, now I'm here and now I want something else. Or I got that job and now I feel fulfilled. Or I got that car and now I want the next car. Or I got in that relationship and now I want to get out of the relationship. And so it's this process of, well, we call that the hedonic treadmill in psychology. The idea that we adapt to different forms of pleasure and eventually need more and more and more. And so, that's one area where we kind of have a complicated relationship to pleasure. Just this idea of like it's got to be big. And then the other is sometimes it's feeling like we shouldn't experience pleasure. We have to be working, 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 and pain is a sign of growth and no pain, no gain. And what is it? Pain is weakness leaving the body. And so if we feel pleasure, it almost feels like we're not doing something. We're not engaged. There's no we can't rest. We can't feel comfortable. And I mean, okay, yes, sometimes we got to push ourselves. Sometimes we got to move out of our comfort zones. But I mean, like, let's pump the brakes a little bit, because if we take that perspective throughout our entire lives, then like what is the point? To never experience joy, to never experience, like, what is all this grinding getting us to die? And then looking at, wow, look how much I grinded and got done. I mean, I suppose you could make that argument. I'm just gonna push, 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 and then at the end of my life, reflect back and wow, look how much I push and look how much was accomplished. Okay, but I still think you can accomplish a tremendous amount and do a tremendous amount of good and give back a lot while also appreciating the journey along the way. And so when I say sometimes in our culture, when I'm referring like to American culture, there's this idea of like the American dream, where it's just like work, 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 and then get the thing, right? The thing, whatever the thing is, the ideal image. The perfect house, the perfect wife, spouse, kids, family, job. And what's so upsetting is in the work that I get to do, I get to see people that have walked that path and then just see how unfulfilled they are and how many decades of their lives they spent working towards something that they thought was going to be the thing that fulfilled them, and then they get there and it wasn't what they thought it was. And it actually really saddens me because there's, can just see it in their faces. You could see, like, wait, are you saying all of this was for nothing? And it's not that it was all for nothing. And you can absolutely point to how much growth and what happened and everything that is learned in that process. But I think there is a very vulnerable and honest moment that comes up for a lot of people where they realize, like, I have been pushing, 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 climbing the corporate ladder, getting that family, getting that house, and now I have it, and like I'm opening my basket and there's nothing in there. Where's the golden nugget? And that's a point of great pain, but it's also a point of it's an inflection point on the journey where we get to explore. It's like, okay, so you exhausted that option. You saw that that pursuit took you so far, but perhaps left you empty-handed. Maybe not completely, but it seems like there's a longing for more. How might we now explore a deeper form of contentment or fulfillment, or what that might actually look like? And so some of that, the way we can explore that and develop that for ourselves is really starting to tune into the subtleties of pleasure in our life, or the positive events in our life, such as when you are walking out your front door and it's a hot summer day and there is that cool breeze. Instead of just like passing through that, waiting, like get to the beach so I could catch some awesome waves, it's like, okay, this is a moment of your life. This is a moment of pleasure that you can tune into. And it's subtle, but tuning into that subtlety keeps the mind from having to need just these big moments. Because if we're dependent on just the big moments, now any moment where we don't have those big moments is a moment of like not good enough. Right? And because big moments, by definition, basically can only be specific moments, and it can't be in every single moment, because then they wouldn't be big moments anymore. They'd just be moments. If we're so dependent on them, then we're going to just be caught in this cycle of needing that, needing that, needing that, and constantly striving to get that, not being fulfilled until we do. And then when we do, not being fulfilled in a way that we thought we would, then just needing the next one. So if there, we can start this process of deeper fulfillment by tuning into like the subtle forms of pleasure that are all around us. And sometimes that's like, tuning into a part of the body that maybe is not in pain right now, especially if you are working with chronic pain. The mind can latch so firmly, so tightly to just all the parts of us that are not functioning well, that are uncomfortable. And it can be harder for the brain to go into, well, are there parts of me that aren't in pain? Maybe like the tip of my right pinky finger. And we start there, and it seems trivial. And it's like, Corey, are you really saying that, like, that's the key? Kind of, yeah. And I don't mean to trivialize anything you're going through, but it's the tuning into that subtlety that we start shifting our attention, we start shifting our focus. That becomes now the new path, the new journey, the new foundation for seeing. For stepping out of this cycle of just focusing on the negative or just reaching for the super positive moments, to seeing that this is much more about like what's here right now, and can this moment be good enough? Can this moment be good enough? It's a very deep topic. It causes me to reflect a lot, because I am someone that for so long was just caught in that pattern of like grandiosity, right? Like I want the nice thing. I want the perfect relationship. I want the perfect kind of kids. I want, or not even the perfect, but the idea of how it should all unfold. And I still find myself like caught in those patterns of the ideas of how I want things to be, and like, oh, once I get there, then things will be good. Or like I'm sitting on the subway, let's say in New York City, and it's like, oh, this is so boring. Or it's like, ugh. And I have to catch myself and like, can I drop in and maybe just find something to appreciate about this moment? And a lot of times it's just as simple as, I'm breathing, right? I'm alive right now. Or I can see people around me right now and I can observe and I have this capacity for curiosity. And maybe, that's a character strength of mine and like I get to use that. Oh, I wonder what that person's thinking or just what their life is like. And that exploration of the world, there's like I go from like, oh, this is boring, it smells, I want to get to my destination, to like, okay, what's here right now? What can I appreciate? And in doing that more and more and more, it just becomes the mind's default way of being in relationship to things. And so we can learn a lot through something like the pleasant events calendar around our relationship to pleasure. And what is our relationship to pleasure? What was this experience like? Was it, did you feel like I don't deserve to have pleasurable moments? Or I found it really hard to find any pleasurable moments. Was your mind just going to like everything that was negative, everything that was wrong? And you could also start to see like what qualities does a pleasant moment, do pleasant moments have in common? Are there common attributes, common things that we can experience and start to see as like an undercurrent, similarities, such as like, oh, you know what? I find that when I'm at peace, there's a sense of like, I'm breathing a bit more deeply. Oh, that's cool, right? So now you start to notice there's something going on physiologically. And maybe now in other moments where you're not feeling so peaceful, you can start to breathe in that way. And perhaps it just, it starts to create that same sense of being settled in. But if you found that maybe at some point throughout this process, you had this the thought of like, I would be so much better at doing this with unpleasant events, right? Like if this were the unpleasant events calendar, man, I would be the king, the queen of that one. Because there does seem to be this tendency to focus more on the negative. And in fact, if you've ever been called a negative person, or someone has said like, "Why are you being so negative?" or "You're such a negative person." Next time someone says that, say like, "Well, that's because I'm programmed to be negative, and so are you." And so let me explain what I mean by that. We actually have hardwired into our brain this the inclination to focus more on the negative rather than the positive. It's called the negativity bias, and all of our brains have this ingrained into them. And you might ask, well, why would the brain do something like that? Well, let's look at it from an evolutionary perspective. Let's say two of our ancestors are out hunting for food. They come across, several hundred thousand years ago, they come across this big dark cave, and one of them goes like, "Oh my God, let's go in that cave. That looks awesome. I bet there's rainbows and unicorns and stuff." And the other one's like, "Okay, you're crazy. There's no way I'm going in there. We have no idea what could be in there. There could be bears, lions, tigers. Like, you're never ever gonna get me to go into that dark cave." And I was like, "Okay, well, you're a loser. I'm going in anyway." And so they go into the cave, and what happens? There's a bear, and they get eaten, and they die, right? And so the other one that was like, "I'm not going in there," they go back to camp, they procreate, and then they pass down their crappy, anxious genes to all of us. And so now, several hundred thousand years later, we are left with the wiring, the hardwiring of our ancestors that basically through natural selection, the one that survived and then passed down their genes were the ones that were able to scan the environment and go, "Ah, that looks like a scary situation. I don't want to do that." Why? Because it helped them survive, and they did survive. And so it's the whole idea of the carrot versus the stick, right? If you miss the carrot one day, then all right, well, maybe tomorrow you'll get another carrot and you'll eat then. But if you miss the stick one day, you're not going to wake up tomorrow to get the carrot. So we develop this capacity, again, through natural selection, to just scan the environment for everything that could go wrong because it was a survival mechanism. And what's happened now is our culture has evolved much, much faster than our brains have been able to evolve. And so we're left with this programming that still latches onto the negative as a survival mechanism, when in a lot of contexts these days, we don't have the same threats. There are different kinds of threats, but a lot of times that wiring is going off when you get an email from your boss that says, like, "See me in 10 minutes." And the mind goes, "Bleh!" What is that? And so it doesn't matter anything that happened positively that day, like the warm cup of coffee and like, seeing your spouse and driving to work and no traffic. Like your mind just latches on to just that negative thing, right? And so Rick Hansen, the neuroscientist, who studies the negativity bias in the brain, he says the brain is like Velcro for the negative and Teflon for the positive. Velcro for the negative, Teflon for the positive. And unfortunately, what he shows us is that through something like mindfulness meditation, we can actually shift that negativity bias to be a bit more of a positivity bias. And one way that we do that, I mean, the mindfulness practice itself just tends to do that. But another thing that he suggests is when you're having a positive event, a positive experience, a pleasant experience, instead of just like writing it off and like, all right, off to the next thing. Like when you're walking out your front door and there's that warm breeze amidst all the chaos in your life, see if you can, he says, like between 20 to 30 seconds is a sweet spot. See if you can really just take it in, absorb the experience, install the experience, feel, enrich the experience of the pleasant experience of the warm breeze on your face or the cool breeze on your face. And just spend like 20, 30 seconds just feeling that, savoring that. What that does is it starts firing off different neurons in the brain that says, oh, positive experiences are important. Oh, maybe I should tune into this. Oh, let me savor this. And then in the future, that becomes more available to you. And so we can start shifting this. And then some of you might be going, I don't want to shift it. Like, I'm in the business world. I should be focusing more on what is negative. Be careful with that. It's to a certain extent. First of all, you're not going to lose your negativity bias completely. You're still going to be able to focus on things that could go wrong. It's fundamental. It's too wired into us. It's not going to evaporate entirely. But it is too skewed in the negative direction often. And what we're seeing is like that negativity bias becomes like the foundation for pessimism, right? Expecting like everything to go wrong and not work out well. And pessimism becomes the foundation. One of the most causal things for things like depression and anxiety. And so while we often think like maybe that's giving me the edge, especially in a business context, it ends up just leading us to see everything that could potentially go wrong in a very negative outlook on scenarios, with an imbalance to like what is going right. Like, so let's just take a perspective of like there are 10 teams working in an organization. The prevailing view in organizational psychology is like, a deficit-based model. Like, what is going wrong? How do we fix it? How do we change it? And we do need to explore the weaknesses and work with the weaknesses. But really, if there are like 10 teams and 9 of them are suffering, rarely are people asking like, well, what is that one team doing really well? They're usually like, why are these nine teams not doing it? What's that one team? How are they working together? What's going well? What are they doing positively? How are they communicating? And so sometimes by orienting our attention to what is good, what is positive, what is working, we can leverage that and we can understand and see like, oh, there's actually something that we could take there that we can learn from and then perhaps replicate rather than just like get rid of the weaknesses, get rid of the weaknesses. And this is just a whole new growth of just exploring how to help individuals flourish, how to help teams flourish, organizations flourish, communities flourish. Instead of just how do we get rid of what's not working, how can we look at what is working and continue to cultivate that? And the foundation of that starts from shifting the negativity bias to more of a positivity bias.